In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's coolest conversations time in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. I'm speaking today with actor and singer Mike Wartella, who's portraying Dion in the upcoming musical production The Wanderer, based on the life and music of Dion. It's scheduled to open on Broadway next year in 2027. Our recent coolest song in the world, Make It Alone, features Mike as one of its lead vocalists. The song was written and released by Dion in 1963 as Gonna Make It Alone, and this new version was produced by Stevie Van Zandt and features backing by the Disciples of Soul. We'll hear a tad of it now, followed by my chat with Mike on your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
Getting older day by day, it's coming time to break away. So many things I want to say, I'm gonna make it alone, alone.
You're with the Mighty Manfred and Little Stephen's Underground Garage, and it's time for your Friday's Coolest Conversations. The guest is actor and singer Mike Wartella, and he portrays Dion in the upcoming theatrical production of the musical The Wanderer, based on the life and music of Dion, scheduled to open in 2027. Our coolest song in the world this week is a tune from the musical titled Make It Alone, and it features Mike singing with actor Diego Andreas Rodriguez. Mike, my friend, how are you?
I'm feeling good, man. I'm feeling honored to be here as part of the coolest family, you know? It's pretty cool for me, so I'm honored.
Oh, well, welcome aboard. You know, I was looking online, and I saw before this, the Wanderer, you're all sorts of cool stuff that you've been doing. You're performing as, is it the role as the John Merrick and the stage production of The Elephant Man? Was that last year?
That was last summer, yeah, in my hometown here at the Berkshire Theater Group. That was a pretty special production for sure.
And you portrayed Merrick.
That's right. Yeah, I got to play the Elephant Man. Yep.
Wow, that's like a pretty heavy role, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, that's the beauty of being up in the Berkshires is you get to do a whole plethora of things. I did that summer, and then in the fall I ended up doing a Queen tribute show, singing all the Freddie Mercury stuff, and you know, I did Pink Floyd's The Wall the year before that and White Christmas the year before that. So it's sort of just, a full spectrum of awesomeness.
I was going to say a pretty intense spectrum. Now, I was also reading, I don't know how old you were, but you were in a production of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
yes, indeed. The one that made it to Broadway. I got to play Mike TV in that. I was actually, yeah.
Oh, man, I should have made you make me guess, because I was thinking it was going to be Mike TV.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I mean, the funny thing, though, was I was actually in my 30s when I played it, because the whole concept of the show was that the really bratty, nasty kids were going to be played by adult actors kind of making fun of it. So that was the real fun of it, for sure.
And one more. You've been in Wicked, mm-hmm. and it's like what was interesting about this, I was looking this stuff up, and it seemed like they must be really just whoever, I don't know how it works, but you've been in the production and then you've been able to take time off and return to the production. They seem to be really accommodating.
Yeah, it's a family. It's very, very loyal in that way, and I'm incredibly grateful to them over my career. I tell people that I did Wicked for a total of 5 years spread out over the span of 10 years. So I got to kind of come in there for a couple of years and then go do other projects and then say, hey, you got a spot for me again? And say, oh yeah, come on back. So I just was back and forth. I actually was there for the 10th anniversary on Broadway. I was in the 10th anniversary cast and I had to leave early for something else, but I almost was in the 20th anniversary. I was like a few months away from being in that. So it was very, very funny and kind of full circle there.
Well, where did you grow up?
I grew up here where I am right now in the Berkshires, in Berkshire County, Massachusetts, sort of Western Mass, west of Boston and, you know, 3 hours north of New York. Beautiful, beautiful place, beautiful countryside, incredibly rich, cultural, artistic place. I had an upbringing, you know, in the theater, doing all the youth productions in all our local regional theaters, which there are many of up here. I also had this other side to me where my stepdad is an artist named David Grover, who was the guitar player for Arlo Guthrie back in the 70s. And he ended up transitioning in the 90s to being a kids folk singer and toured all around the country with my mom and the band called David Grover and the Big Bear Band. And so from the time I was a kid, I was in the studio singing folk harmonies and learning the ropes there. And so I have this sort of duality of theater and Broadway and like folk rock in my veins.
Well, I'm glad you share that with me, because that explains a lot from you, you know, from Merrick to Freddie Mercury, you know, from Merrick to Mercury.
Yeah, like that'll be my autobiography, from Merrick to Mercury.
Yeah. Well, I give that to you as a gift.
Thank you very much. Yeah. That's great.
You were doing this theater stuff as a child. Did you sing in bands at all as you grew up, or was it your focus there on doing the stage stuff?
Mostly it was the stage stuff. There were always a couple high school bands here and there. I actually played the drums first. I have a lot of musical background and little drums, little guitar, little piano. And so sometimes when I'd be in bands, I would just be the drummer in the band. And as I got to, you know, graduate high school, I was really debating, do I go to music school for my drumming? Do I go to theater school? And it occurred to me all of a sudden, I said, you know, the drummer's just in the back all the time. I want to be up front. So all of a sudden I said, okay, I think I'm going to go onto the stage and, you know, do that. But rhythm is in my blood and it kind of starts from there for me. And it's really nice.
Well, you mentioned your dad playing with Arlo Guthrie. What sort of music were you hearing at home there? It was mainly his repertoire.
It was a great mix of things, because my mother, who is a little bit younger than my stepdad, you know, my stepdad was bringing all the 50s, 60s, everything from Elvis and, you know, Mamas and the Papas and that folk scene from the 60s and 70s into the house. But then my mom had some of the like Billy Joel, Elton John going on. And, you know, of course, they all loved the Beatles, which was great. And then I always feel like each of us sort of holds on to our childhood music as like the stuff, right? So, you know, I hear my buddies talk about it who grew up in the 80s. They're like, oh, it was the 80s, you know? And then when Dion talks about it, it was the 50s, you know? For me, it was the 90s. All that grunge rock scene, all that Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Green Day, like that really spoke to me in a big, big way. So I kind of had a little mix of everything going on.
And then you're able to make use of that when you're playing all these different roles and taking advantage of the history. Your stepdad, that must have helped his knowledge of the 50s stuff. I mean, what I'm getting at is, how familiar with Dion were you before you landed the role?
That's a great question. Another connection there is, it's actually my grandparents. It was my grandfather who was the first to introduce me to Dion's music. I was at a rehearsal a couple of days ago with Dion, because we're going to be singing some of the backup harmonies for him and his shows coming up. And so we're sitting in his living room having conversation, you know, after singing Run Around Sue. And I told him, I said, Dion, I was 2 years old. I have a photo still of me with these big giant headphones as big as my head over my ears. And my grandfather was letting me listen to Run Around Sue for the first time ever on a cassette tape. And I just was transported, you know, I mean, it was just such an amazing, and I loved Run Around Sue and The Wanderer and Teenager and Love, all the hits from the time I was literally like 4 or 5 years old. So it's kind of a trip, for sure, to say the least, to not only get to portray him, sing those songs, be friends with him. Like, we're really good buddies. We call each other and talk and catch up. And sometimes it's one of those, like, what is my life kind of moments, you know?
Right. Well, so to give us an idea of, I mean, because the production started around 2022, is that right?
Like, it just, well, the actual real development, I would say, started at least 2017, 2018. I was doing readings and workshops of the material way back then, when Charles Messina, the writer and producer of the show, along with Jill Menza, and now Stevie and Maureen, kind of got us together and got me and Dion together and started doing readings of the show. And so we've been working on it. I've been with it for at least eight or nine years now at this point. And it was, you know, it's had a long, long journey. We eventually did get a big production, a full production at the Paper Mill Playhouse in, I think, 2022, which is probably what you're talking about, which was fantastic.
But that Paper Mill Playhouse, where is that?
That's over in Millburn, New Jersey. So it's actually only about 45 minutes on the train from New York City. Big, beautiful, well-known regional theater, 1,200 plus seats. They do a lot of new works. They do a lot of new productions going to Broadway. Start there. Yeah, it was great.
And so you had the role of Dion from day one?
Yeah, I'm pretty lucky in that way. I was the first one to do it. I've so far really been the only one to do it. They've had moments where they've auditioned some people and sort of tried some things out, but it always came back around to me, which I'm very lucky and grateful for. It was one of those special moments. You know, I appreciate you starting off by saying I had this cool career and everything, which is absolutely true. I've had some cool stuff in my life. I would say this is by far the coolest and by far the most special to me. You know, I didn't really know anything about Dion's real life, his personal life. I just knew the music. And when I met Charles Messina, he made it very clear to me that this story is really first and foremost about someone who struggled with addiction and had recovery come into his life and redemption by the end of it. And it's sort of almost the secondary part is his rise to fame and his career, which is sort of what most jukebox musicals are about. We tend to focus much more on his actual personal life, meeting Susan, Run Around Sue, who he's still married to 50 plus years later, getting into recovery through 12-step, having a tumultuous addiction and the way it affected him and her and their whole family. And the thing was, between the street Bronx, you know, tough New York strong element of the show, between the incredible rock music that somehow just fit right in my range, and I didn't have to do much at all to, you know, imitate Dion, it just kind of sounded similar, and that struggle with addiction, which is something I've actually gone through myself and come through recovery and 12-step, and I'm very grateful and proud about that, you know, it all combined perfectly, and I said to myself, I know this story. The lines are blurred between me and him, and it's just right there. So I think, you know, Charles and Dion and everybody, when they first saw me do the reading, they thought, oh, this kid can sing and he's, you know, a decent actor. But there's this scene towards the end where I end up sort of, you know, I don't want to spoil it, but I end up really finding redemption. And it was pretty powerful for all of us in the moment, and we could feel it. And I think that was the moment where they went, oh, this guy knows something about this and maybe he should be attached to this, you know? And then we've just all created it together since then. It's been a blessing.
Right. This is the man moment. Mm-hmm. You know, this is our guy. Okay.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk some about our coolest song in the world this week. It's from the production. It's you singing with Diego Andres Rodriguez. The tune Make It Alone. First of all, what is the character that Diego is playing?
Diego's, he's a guy from the neighborhood. He's one of my best friends in the show, one of Dion's best friends. You know, he might be his manager, he might be his mentor, so to speak. You know, at times he's also helping him get into trouble and then getting him out of trouble. So he's just sort of, he's a pretty interesting character, that's to say.
Is he like, in real life, is he like a composite character? These are several different guys or... Was there a Diego
Right. From what I understand in developing this, Diego's character is actually not really truly based on any one person. I mean, there were definitely people around that Dion said, oh, that guy kind of reminds me of him. But he's sort of, what's also beautiful about her play is it's incredibly truthful and it's, you know, biography in the telling of it. And obviously Dion's in the room with us. So he's going, yeah, my mom said this, my dad did that, which is pretty cool. But then it goes to, as he likes to say, a higher pitch, a higher reality. And so it really, you know, gets a little bit almost fairy tale esque in some of its way. Not to say it's not truthful. It just gets incredibly theatrical and really, really human, you know.
Make It Alone. What is going on in that scene where you guys are performing it in the musical? What part of where in the story is this?
Make It Alone is a great song. It's one of my favorite ones to do every day in the show. It's very early in the show. It's maybe second or third song up in the show, first 10 minutes of the show. There's actually two songs right around that section back to back. One's called Born to Cry, which is another famous Dion hit where he kind of rails at the heavens about how his whole life has been difficult. And then Make It Alone is when his friend Johnny shows up and says, hey, we're going to get out of the dumps and we're going to be big stars someday. And the reason I say that is because in theater, there's sort of a very specific progression that shows follow. And one of the rules to a musical is early in the show, you have to have your lead character have what's called an I want song, which tells the audience what they're going for in life, what they want. Whether they achieve it or not, the story will tell. And so we kept arguing, you know, is it Born to Cry is the I want song? Is it Make It Alone? And it's sort of like you have to set one up to knock the other one down. And certainly Make It Alone becomes the I want song. Going to get out of this place, make it be a big star, and I'm doing it all by myself with nobody's help. It's a big party, you know?
So the version that we've got is our coolest song. It was produced by one Stevie Van Zandt, Little Steven. What was it like working with Stevie in the studio?
Oh man, it's been such a cool thing. It's been such an honor, this whole process. You know, I talked for a while about working with Dion and what that was like. I also, you know, when Stevie started to come into this project, at first he was a bit of just a consultant. You know, him and Dion are friends from way back in the scene, and so he was just there, and I was like, wow, Stevie Van Zandt's in the room with us. Like, this is wild, you know. And right away he would get up in rehearsal and start saying, hey, you know what I think you should do in this moment? You should turn out and say, and I was like, well, this is cool. And now that he's become, you know, him and his wife have become a full time producing partner on the show, it's just an absolute honor, and he's heavily involved in the music of it, the arranging. And then to have this idea to say, let's go into the studio and start putting down some tracks and use the Disciples of Soul. And it's been a dream. It's been a dream to walk into his space, you know, and get to be there to create with him. And at the same time, what I take from it is he seems to really share my sensibility of the whole thing, which is you got to take the music seriously, but you also got to have a good time and relax. You know, you can't be so uptight about perfection and hitting it right that it's like ruining the art. And so the art comes first and the flow comes first. And he's just already taught me so much by just, you know, getting to observe him and work with him. I can't wait to learn more from him. He's the best.
You know, I've worked with him in the studio before, and that's exactly it. He will attempt things, and then he has the foresight, the knowledge to know when something's not working out, completely change direction. There's no reason to pursue something that's not working out, and to keep that element of the energy up, right? To keep that creative flow going. So he's great as a producer. Now, you know, he's also worked as a director. I know he directed episodes of his program, Lilyhammer. You've worked with different directors. What are some similarities between the role of a music producer and a director? Do you see any?
It's a great question. Yeah, of course I do. I actually almost, for my own self too, I have over the years in my career, I have one of those opinions that's sort of very blurry when it comes to the creative team of a show and an experience. I think we're all creating, we're all collaborating. Certainly there are roles that need to be filled, and like the director's kind of in charge, you know, sort of the boss, and you need that, and you got to follow that. But also in a really truly special creative process like this has been since day one, we all give input, we all give ideas. You know, the choreographers had a huge part in telling the story, that Sonny Palladino, our music director, like all these people, myself and some of the other actors I've actually in this show been lucky enough to like come up with ideas for arrangements of songs and, you know, stuff like that, which is kind of unheard of usually for an actor in a Broadway show. And so, you know, to me, Stevie as a director, producer, you know, music director, friend, collaborator, it's kind of all one thing. It's just we're in this room to make something special and, you know, best idea kind of wins. So it's pretty great.
So the tune "Make It Alone," as you guys perform, it's "Make It Alone." Dion's original title, I think, is "Gonna Make It Alone." It came out like back in 1963, and I've seen him online talking about the song, describing it as being from when he was really full of himself, right? When he originally wrote the song, has he told you what the song meant to him then, as opposed to now?
Oh, sure. Yeah. That's one of the benefits and the beauties of getting to work with him up close is, you know, you can just ask him, you know, hey, how are you feeling in this moment? You know, and he talks about it. I mean, there's a pretty clear line in Dion's life that he crossed at a certain point. And it's almost like two different guys. And it's very interesting because a lot of the first guy, which is sort of what everyone knows and is famous, you know, for all that stuff, is really just not who he is today at all anymore. And it just happened almost overnight. you know, and so he can laugh about it now. He can joke about it, but he shares something I've gone through in my life, which is he was just all ego. He was all ego, and he was hurt. You know, he was struggling. He was having a hard time, and the way he covered that up was through ego. And so at that time, he was like, I didn't need anybody. I was going to get out there. I was going to get everything and forget everybody. I was just going to do it my way. You know, that was how he felt. Now he's completely the opposite, but I understand what that feels like. And, you know, I think there's something interesting to explore with it.
That's right, because you can't sit back there on the drums. You got to be fun.
See, yeah, you know, I went through it too. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Now the show, my understanding is the show is going to open sometime in 2027. Can you be any more specific? Is it the time of the year? Or?
I wish I could. No, it's one of those kind of beautiful things, if you ask me, but also difficult, which is like I've done many, many developments of Broadway shows over the years. Again, nothing as awesome as this, but in those, you know, in that process, it takes at least 10 years usually from conception to stage, and sometimes more. And there are, you know, getting everyone's schedules together is part of it. But the main part of it is that Broadway is a very specific area in a very specific town that is pretty small relatively. And so you got hundreds of shows kind of vying for theaters and spots and all that stuff. And you have a couple people deciding how it's all going to go. So we are absolutely right there. We've kind of got plans. There's stuff I can't talk about, but it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time and being a little patient, you know. And I think there's something cool about that even as artists is like, it's just up to the universe to be like, well, whenever it's supposed to happen, it'll happen and we'll figure it out and, you know, nail it then. But it's coming. It's coming real soon.
You know, that's really interesting. This analogy here, I think of, you know, musicians, bands, and you record an album and then it just seems like it takes forever, you know, getting the record together and then you've got it recorded and then it's still going to be upwards of another, not always, but it's not uncommon for it to take like another full year before it comes out. And you're kind of wringing your hands and pulling your hair like, you know, it finally happens. But then it's like, well, that was, you know, we've already moved on musically.
That's right. Yeah. We got a new sound now. We want to try something new. Yeah.
Right. But then here, what you're describing is like, you're not just birthing the baby. It's like you're raising the kid before it's actually able to be where you want it to be.
And the benefit of that, at least in our world, is by the time it does arrive, theoretically, it's at its best possible version. It's had every chance to get better and stronger and deeper and richer and have all the people live in it and make sense of it. And so hopefully you're seeing the best version of it you've ever seen, you know?
Right. You're seeing it full grown.
That's right. That's right.
Matured and full grown. Well, we're going to go out on a track of yours that you, you had a release, I think around 2020, an EP called Polarity with you as the lead singer on it. Let's talk some about that. Sir, do you have this acting career and a singing career still going on in parallel, or you've just focused these days on the acting?
Well, that's funny. I mean, actually, these days, I'm honestly mostly focused on teaching because I'm up here in the Berkshires very often, and I'm teaching in the schools, and I'm teaching acting and singing and music to my students, which is awesome. But of course, they're both always in my blood here. So I'm always doing theater, and yeah, I'm always writing songs and playing guitar and, you know, singing in shows. And I often perform in venues around New York, Green Room 42 and 54 Below and downtown at Le Poisson Rouge and, you know, different spots. And it's just something I think as an artist you're always doing. But I love that side. That album and this track and that whole world came out of, it was birthed out of, you know, maybe 5 or so years ago, being in theater and loving what I was doing, but feeling like the flip side to the collaborative process was I really didn't have enough of a say. I didn't get to do what I wanted to do creatively. So I said, you know what? Just go out and do an album and then it'll be yours and you can do what you want to do and make your sound. And, you know, it's been a joy and a blessing. I worked on it with some of my best friends and great, great artists in music. And I'm pretty proud of it. It's good.
And I know one of the tracks, is a song Trust. You got, who's this?
Allison Luff. Yeah.
Who is she?
Allison Luff is a pretty big deal in the theater world. She's been a Broadway star for years. She's also now transitioned over into TV and film. And I always forget the name of the show she's on, but it's like a wrestling show on like HBO or something. She plays the wife of the lead wrestler there. And she's also with her husband for many, many years, had this incredible band, sort of a folk duo they do. And she's just one of the greatest, you know, singers ever. And I needed someone on that track who not only understood the folk world and the rock world, but who could really open up the pipes and kind of belt, you know, in a high way on the harmonies. And so she absolutely nailed it and delivered. And it was great.
And what about the track Falling Behind? It's the opening cut to the release. What can you tell us about the song?
I actually really love that one. It's a very interesting story, but it's my partner, Natalie Gallo. It's her favorite song on the album. She always loves it. She's like, play Falling Behind. I said, okay, all right. And it was a very interesting story. I wrote it with the band, and it was called something else, and it had a completely different melody and a completely different set of lyrics. And it was very driving. It was actually... one of my producers at the time was saying, you need something up-tempo. You got too many ballads. You got to do like a summer bop hit, you know, something like Maroon 5's Sugar. And so I'm writing the song. I'm begging, begging, baby, I'm begging, please, yeah. And we recorded it, and we were listening to it and mixing it and all that. And I said, you guys, this isn't me. Like, I don't know what this is, but it's not me. And it was my music producer who said, I got an idea. Why don't we try something? He goes, I'm going to scrap the vocals, and I'm going to send you the instrumental track. Write a new song. Over the track, completely, completely different. Just rethink it. And I sat and I just listened to the music, and that same verse I just sang turned into "Time can take you away from me," like a completely different song and sound. And then we landed on something that we felt was really, really special and cool. And it's actually one of my favorite songs ever now.
Okay, we're going to take a listen to it. Mike, first, let me thank you for joining us on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you, my friend, for having me. This has been a blast.
Man, and best of luck to you in the production of The Wanderer, based on the life and music of Dion. Okay, we're going to give a listen to Falling Behind. It's Mike Wartella from his release Polarity in Little Steven's Underground Garage. From his 2020 release Polarity, that was Mike Wartella here in Little Steven's Underground Garage singing Falling Behind. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Mike for speaking with me on our Coolest Conversations, and best of luck to him and the rest of the cast on the upcoming production of The Wanderer. Thanks as well to Kurt Baker for producing our podcast. The French band Prisoner, they've developed a distinctive sound at the crossroads of film noir, retro television series, science fiction imagination, and garage rock. They've got a single out on Wicked Cool titled The Self-Made Woman, and an entire album is to follow in August. Joining me to talk about these releases and to give us a sense of the band's history is our guitarist, Philos. He's my guest next time around on your Coolest Conversations presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.